I'm Henry McNulty for Spokane Public Radio, and this is From the Studio. I'm here today with folks from Gonzaga University and their production of The Vagina Monologues. I'm joined by Leslie Stimulis, the director. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
By Julia Witherell, a cast member. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
And by Emily Beck.
Hello.
Give me the basic rundown of this show. It's obviously a very familiar piece, has been performed since the 90s countless times, including at universities and colleges. Very popular pick there. What was behind your choice to perform this?
Well, the first time Gonzaga Theater did the Vagina Monologues was in 2019. And at that time, a student in one of my classes asked if I knew the Vagina Monologues. I said, yes, of course. And she said, has it ever been performed at Gonzaga? And I paused and I said, well, actually, there's a history there. And she said, I wish I could do the Vagina Monologues. And she was a senior. And I paused and I said, we should do the Vagina Monologues. So at that time, we put it together rather quickly. But that first performance in February of 2019 for our department, for Gonzaga Theater, was the birth of what is now our winter staged reading that is always focused on feminist works and feminist voices. So last year, as we were planning this year's staged reading, several of the students came to me and said, we really want to do the Vagina Monologues. And it's been now 7 years, so none of them were here when we did it last. And it's a piece, you know, many schools, many theaters do it annually. For us, it paved the way for the idea of focusing on feminist voices in our season. And this time around, with so many students showing such a new interest in it and excitement for it, I said, yeah, I think you're right. I think the time has come to bring it back.
So as we mentioned, it's a very famous piece, has had a great cultural impact. Why do you feel it wasn't done at Gonzaga until then? Was it just not the right time and then finally it's come around?
The piece, as you said, it is very popular on college campuses, and I think there's many reasons for that, and I think it's wonderful. Colleges have sort of become the keepers of the flame, as it were, for this piece. I was not at Gonzaga when it was first proposed and performed. What I understand from colleagues who are still there, who shepherded the piece the first time from Women's and Gender Studies and the English department, they felt there was some nervousness around some of the content in the piece. I would like to think that the nervousness was not around saying the word vagina or talking about women's experiences. Mm-hmm. The piece is definitely R-rated because it gets very real. It talks about all the beautiful positivity around a woman's experience with her body and the negativity and the trauma that can occur as well. So it really runs the gamut. So there is definitely content that is difficult to hear and content that's difficult to grapple with. That said, the very first performance by Gonzaga students of the monologues was only allowed to be performed off campus. And that was in, maybe 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. In 2011, it was performed again, and this time it was on campus, but it was not open to the public. In 2019, though, when I went to, at the time, my chair of the department, and we started talking about the show, and then we had to have some conversations with the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, who was our first female dean at the time. We had conversations with the academic vice president, who was a female administrator, and everyone was very supportive. There was no concerns about the content at that time. There was just concerns about if people have, you know, if there's a protest or if people are concerned about a Catholic university doing this piece. Since then, though, no one has even called me to ask, okay, how do we feel about doing this piece of work again? There's been none of that. And now with our first female president at Gonzaga University, I'd like to think that women's voices can be heard without any concerns about what we might say or talk about.
It's hard to miss the pattern there as time went on. As female administrators began to come in, you can see the impact that has on what can be socially acceptable and what can be performed.
Yes.
It is, as we've mentioned, a piece that is, well, it's very provocative in a lot of ways, even today, and has, I understand, been updated over the decades as well as, you know, additional issues come to light and as the playwright V has done additional monologues. How closely does this version that you're doing resemble the very original, or has it been expanded as time has gone on?
Well, for a long time there, it was changed a little bit every year. When the monologues were directly connected with the V-Day Foundation, which was founded in, I think, 2001 to be a charity and an outreach program for ending gender-based violence around the world. At that time, the monologues were adapted a little bit every year. Some pieces would be taken out, some new ones would be added in for the month of February, which was known as V-Month. And during February, anyone could perform the monologues free of license, free of fees, as long as everything you earned from the production would be given to a local organization that was working to end gender-based violence. So that's what we did in 2019. All the proceeds from our performance went to Spokane YWCA. Since then, V and the Vagina Monologues have taken a step aside from the V-Day Foundation. And in, I think it was 2021 or 22, they no longer became an official part of V-Day, or they were no longer an official part of V-Day. So at that time, they were licensed by dramatists. And now, like any other play, you pay the license fee to perform the show. So you're no longer required to donate the proceeds, but we will be donating our ticket proceeds to Spokane YWCA again.
Let me take a moment to speak to our actors here in the room. This is a piece that certainly must be fascinating to perform in its breadth of issues, and as female or female-identifying performers, must certainly speak to your own personal experiences and to the personal experiences of half of the human population. So perhaps, Emily, I'll start with you about what you're doing in the show and what your experience has been.
Yeah, so I was really excited to be a part of the show. It has, you know, this history to it that I knew before coming into it. And so there is that weight there, but it just is so lovely to be surrounded by so many women involved with the show and gender nonconforming people as well. And it's just absolutely wonderful to have these conversations. I feel like young women aren't given the opportunity to have these conversations a lot. And so, I mean, we have our monologues, and there's some monologues I identify with, some I don't, some I know people who would identify with, and it's powerful to sit there and hear all of these people read through these experiences, and it's hard at points, but a lot of those have triggered conversations outside of the rehearsal space also with other cast members, and I think that that's really a lot of what the show is about. Is there is the performance, which is powerful and moving and a wonderful piece of theater. But there's the conversations that happen after it, which I think is what the show is trying to spark. So having those conversations with my fellow cast members has been really, really powerful part of the show.
Julia, I'll throw the same prompt to you about what you're doing in the show and your experience.
So I'm one of the actors. I do some parts in some of the pieces. My experience with this, I was so overjoyed when the idea that we were going to do the Vagina Monologues came out in the first place. I was so excited to do them. I was so happy when I read it. It is a really powerful piece, and I think definitely the main reason and what I've noticed is how much support that you get from the cast, from other people that you talk to about it as well.
So you're talking about your experiences alongside your other cast members and the conversations that that creates. I'm sure there must be content in this that feels very personal to some people. So as a cast, and Leslie, maybe you can speak to this as well, how do you process everything that is in this show? And I don't want to go as far as triggering, although possibly that's an element of it, but it must speak to some people's personal stories very deeply. How do you navigate that?
One consideration that we have is in educational theater and college theater like this, we have an inherent power dynamic that I'm a professor and they are my students enrolled in this performance lab. So early in the process, I told them there will be conversations and things that we all want to share with each other that I can't necessarily be a part of as your professor. So that's why when Emily says, you know, conversations outside of rehearsal, that's mm-hmm. really, I think, when the most in-depth and important conversations have been happening, which is lovely and the way it should be. Anytime you're working on a play with characters having any kind of intense experiences, in the rehearsal room, you have to talk about those, and you talk about them in the context of the character. And sometimes people will be compelled to share something personal. But like any workspace, you have to make sure that it's okay with everyone to share something personal and that you're not doing trauma dumping and things like that if you have a shared experience. So I have encouraged everyone in the cast to have conversations with each other, have conversations with people they love and trust. We also have support on campus from our, you know, student health and counseling center, or even a staff member at Gonzaga who is a part of our cast, who works in the Office of Health Promotion and does education around gender-based violence. Having those resources available for the students to reach out to, I think, is really important if the monologues do trigger an experience that you have had that you need to talk about. What's fun is the positive experiences that the monologue brings out and being able to share those with each other as well. Again, I'm not usually in the room for that to keep things appropriate, but I'm thrilled to know that the students are feeling empowered to talk with each other. One of the lines in the introduction to the monologue says, "Women were secretly really excited to talk about their vaginas, mostly because no one had ever asked them before." Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that happens with this cast. Any cast of the Vagina Monologues is realizing, oh, maybe I want to talk about my own experience in my body as well. And I think that's been happening, and that's really lovely and healthy.
These monologues were inspired in very large part by interviews that V conducted with, I believe, over 200 women. Do you have any idea of what that original prompt was?
We know one of the prompts at least. So the story goes that she was doing research for a play she was writing or for some characters in a play she was writing. So she just started asking women about their experiences with their bodies and very quickly realized, oh, this is the play, actually. These stories are so incredible. They need to be told. We do know, because it's still in the monologues, there's at least two prompts that she gave every woman she talked to, which was, if your vagina could get dressed, what would it wear? And if your vagina could talk, what would it say in two words? So that's a recurring theme throughout the script, which is pretty exciting. The rest of the time, some of the monologues read like a verbatim transcription. There's one in particular that's really heartbreaking and funny called The Flood. And it begins with a woman saying, "I haven't been down there since 1953. So you hear this woman's experience, who at the time was probably in her 60s. So some of them read very verbatim, and you get a sense of what that conversation was like. And some of them are probably an amalgamation of women's stories. The original prompt, though, my guess is that she didn't have to ask very much before women just started talking.
I believe that we do have a monologue to share today. Emily, if you wouldn't mind, and would you also introduce what the piece is?
Yeah, so this is my monologue in the show. It's called Hair. And I could go more into that, or I can just start saying it, because you'll get it pretty quickly.
We can just let it speak for itself, and I can ask a follow-up if I need to.
Lovely. So this is Hair. "You cannot love a vagina unless you love hair. Many people do not love hair. My first and only husband hated hair. He said it was cluttered and dirty. He made me shave my vagina. It looked puffy and exposed like a little girl. This excited him. When he made love to me, my vagina felt the way a beard must feel. It felt good to rub it and painful, like scratching a mosquito bite. It felt like it was on fire. There were screaming red bumps. I refused to shave it again. Then my husband had an affair. We went to marital therapy. He said he screwed around because I wouldn't please him sexually. I wouldn't shave my vagina. The therapist had a German accent and gasped between sentences to show her empathy. She asked me why I didn't want to please my husband. I told her I thought it was weird. I felt little when my hair was gone down there, and I couldn't help talking in a baby voice, and the skin got irritated, and even calamine lotion wouldn't help it. She told me marriage was a compromise. I asked her if shaving my vagina would stop him from screwing around. I asked her if she had many cases like this before. She said questions diluted the process. I needed to jump in. She was sure it was a good beginning. This time, when we got home, he got to shave my vagina. It was like a therapy bonus prize. He clipped it a few times and there was a little blood in the bathtub. He didn't even notice because he was so happy shaving me. Then, later, when my husband was pressing against me, I could feel his spiky sharpness sticking to me. My naked, puffy vagina. There was no protection. There was no fluff.
I realized then that hair is there for a reason. It's the leaf around the flower, the lawn around the house. You have to love hair in order to love the vagina. You can't pick the parts you want. And besides, my husband never stops screwing around.
Excellent. Thank you. There is obviously implied in that part of the subject matter is relationships with men and those power dynamics, those interpersonal dynamics. Not to open a can of worms here, although I'm obviously about to.
That's kind of what the whole show is.
Yeah, that's true. But it's hard not to see the extreme relevance of this at this present moment in so many ways throughout society. But of course, my mind goes to the Epstein files and everything that we're continuing to learn. And of course, the lack of accountability for everything that we're continuing to learn. Is that something that's on your minds during this?
Well, I think it's on everybody's mind currently, but definitely when we're starting to talk about trauma of women and you hear some of the stories in the show and it definitely brings up those conversations. One thing about this show is hearing the stories that are more traumatic and more difficult to hear and get through is I am not surprised that any of these stories exist. But that doesn't make it any easier to get through. And I think it says a lot that hearing these stories, I was expecting these stories coming into a show like this. Because for just so long, women have just had to go through this trauma. And I'm so glad that there is many victims speaking out and many people who are trying to get accountability. But it's so disappointing to see that a lot of it isn't happening.
The last time we did the show, Roe v. Wade was in place.
That's a sobering thought.
Yes. And here we are 7 years later, and we're on the other side of it now. And that backwards progression is extremely upsetting. So whenever people ask, why are the monologues still relevant or are they still relevant, the answer is always, of course they are. And unfortunately, they always will be. The divide between women as object and women as subject is something that I find really interesting in this piece, because in every one of these monologues, woman is subject. She gets to be in charge of the story. It's always in first person, and it's in the woman's voice. And that's certainly something we see with the Epstein files, is that all of the women in that situation are treated as object for some other lead character. And that is not the case in this piece. Another thing that's heartening about the vagina monologues is that it expresses relationship dynamics between women and men, between women and women, sexual relationships, familial relationships between all of these different people. And some of them are positive and some of them are negative. It really does try to depict a whole spectrum. So for a monologue like Hair, where we hear maybe a pretty stereotypical and disappointing depiction of a man in this relationship, then there's a monologue like Because He Liked to Look at It, which is about a woman having sex with a man who loves to look at vaginas and thinks they're beautiful and how eye-opening that was for her. So you really get this variety of experiences. But overall, the main point is that woman is always main character in each of these monologues. And that's not the way it often is in the world.
Well, the show is coming up at Gonzaga at the Magnuson Theater in College Hall. This, again, is the Vagina Monologues, written by V and directed by one of my guests, Leslie Stimulis, and featuring an ensemble of students, staff, and faculty making up the production. I was joined here by Julia Witherell and Emily Beck, both of whom are performers in the piece. I'd like to thank all of you for coming today and talking to me.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you so much.
For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Henry McNulty.